Patriotism is proud of a country's virtues and eager to correct its deficiencies. It also acknowledges the legitimate patriotism of other countries with their own specific virtues. The pride of nationalism, however, trumpets its country's virtues and denies its deficiencies, while it is contemptuous towards the virtues of other countries. It wants to be and proclaims itself to be the greatest. But greatness is not required of a country. Only goodness is. And that quote comes from Sidney J. Harris. Welcome to Surviving the Matrix, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Maxwell Egan. It's a pleasure to be with you once again, and I will be your host for the next hour. Well, interesting times in the world today, folks. Very interesting times indeed. Certainly interesting times for me. I'm off to Sydney tomorrow to speak at a film screening of 911 Explosive Evidence, The Experts Speak Out. Then I will be back home for another trust law workshop on Monday evening. And later in the month, I will be emceeing the David Icke event on the Gold Coast. The day after the event, David and I and Adam Davis and I believe some other people will be flying to Alice Springs to spend 4 days at Uluru. And from there, I will be continuing on to the Kimberley Coast in Western Australia. I'll be going to a town called Broome, and I will be attending a gathering at James Price Point on the 10th of October. So it's going to be a very interesting month for me, folks. And I'd like to bring you some of the stories and the teachings of the elders of this country that I encounter along the way in regard to certain aspects of their law. And the whole Uluru trip on the way is an incredibly significant event for me because it's really quite amazing. I've been discussing it with a few friends of mine, and it really is quite an incredible series of synchronicities that have led to the whole thing. And it also seems to be quite a significant event, and for me, a very humbling event. And what I'd like to do, actually, is share with you the series of events that I've just been involved in and the events that I'm still involved in, and just let the cards fall where they may. And folks, look, I don't really know what to make of all of this stuff. I'm simply a researcher and an investigator. I have developed my own particular understanding of the way reality works and the way the universe works. I've found that through meditation and through intention and by following the synchronicities in my life, I am literally able to find my Dharma and follow my Dharma, and just my life seems to just flow in this series of events, which always puts me where I'm supposed to be at the right time. And this has all occurred through simply developing this particular understanding of how reality works. And this is what I've attempted to share with you on the shows on so many occasions, simply because I know the changes that it's made to my life. And I'd like to see other people be able to do this because it's an incredible way to live your life, to simply follow the flow. And you find that if you do simply follow the flow of everything in your life, if your intentions are pure and your understanding of reality is pure, then you find that your life simply flows exactly the way it is supposed to flow. Now, recently, it's very likely that you've heard me talk about the songlines of the original people that start in Byron Bay here. You've maybe heard me talk about a lady called Kerri-Ann Cox who changed the songlines on August 6th. She actually interjected a new code into the songline, a new song into the songline. And what I'm about to tell you, as I said, folks, I don't know, I'm just a white man, but this is the law that has been passed down to me by the Origini elders. Now, according to legend, where I live here in Byron Bay is the place of the first song. This is where the first Bora ring was created, and it is the tale of the rainbow serpent. And it is only in this first Bora ring that a new code may be put into the songline that will succeed in changing the entire songline. And according to legend, you use the songlines in order to interact with the ley lines on the planet, the global energy grid that crisscrosses the Earth. Now, Kerri-Ann Cox apparently put a new code into the Songline on August 6 of 2011. And according to dowsers around the country and around the world, this began shifting the global ley lines. And as I said, folks, I can't read energy lines. I'm not a dowser. I don't know. All I know is what I've been told, and this is what I'm sharing with you now. And look, folks, you can fob this off as being New Age or whatever you want, but ultimately the existence of this global energy grid is a scientifically proven reality. These energy lines do exist. And what has been shared with me is that these lines began to shift on August 6th. Now, very significantly, there is a very old legend of the Originee people that in the darkest time, there will be two women who will travel from the northwest, and they will travel to the land of the rising sun. The land of the rising sun in Originee culture is the place where the sun rises first, the most easterly point of the country, the land of the first song, and the tale of the rainbow serpent, and that is here in Byron Bay. So the legend recounts that these two women will come from the mouth of the serpent, and they will travel to the tail of the serpent, to the land of the rising sun, and they will bring back the light of the rising sun to the northwest. And it is greatly believed in many circles that those two women may well be Kerri-Ann Cox and her mother Lorna, who have recently travelled from the northwest, from the mouth of the serpent, and they have come here to Byron Bay, and they have begun a shift of the global energy lines. Apparently then, according to legend, the path of the song lines must then be followed back to the mouth of the serpent. And Kerri-Ann and her mother and the people that they are travelling with were leaving in two groups, and they were following two of the paths of the song lines. There are actually three main paths that need to be followed to trace the inside and the outside and the centre of the rainbow serpent. And they had two of the paths covered, but they needed someone to go on another path on their way to James Price Point, and that was a path that would take them to Uluru. When I mentioned to them that I was happened to be going to Uluru on the 25th, they looked at me and said, "Well, of course you are, Max." And something very significant that had happened just a few days before then is that Kerri-Ann had welcomed me into the Noombal people, who are her people from Western Australia, and they had treated with me to adopt me into their tribe. So I had been made a Noombal man even before they knew I was going to Uluru. But because I was made Noombal, I'm now able to take a message stick to Uluru. And bear in mind, folks, this Uluru trip is something that's been planned for about a month before I ever met Kerri-Ann or her mother. I'd already planned to be going there with Adam Davis and David Icke, and we were going to be there at that particular time. And there is another part to this which is also quite significant. Now, someone has recently told me of a legend that exists somewhere in North America. I don't know whether it's the Hopi. I think it may be part of a Hopi legend. Perhaps it's part of a Mayan legend. Perhaps it's another tribe. And I'm desperately trying to remember who conveyed the information to me, because I've been searching for information about it, but I haven't been able to find any. So I have no way of confirming this legend at the moment. But again, it was recounted to me by someone recently. I'll try to find who told me anyway. But apparently there is a legend that exists that says that there is a shift that is supposed to occur that emanates from the red land in the south, and that it begins with the activation of the sacred mountain in the center of the red land. And again, folks, I don't know who told me this, and I will attempt to find some more information about it. But I find it very significant that I am going to what is essentially the sacred mountain in the middle of the red land. I will be arriving there on September 25th. And on September 27th here in Australia, which is actually September 26th for those in the Northern Hemisphere, I will be sitting on top of Uluru doing ceremony, and doing this at exactly the time of the final alignment of Comet Elenin. And again, folks, none of this has been planned. It's just that fate has put me on top of Uluru doing ceremony on the very day that Comet Elenin is making its final alignment. And I don't know whether any of this actually means anything, but I feel it incredibly bizarre and incredibly significant that these two legends exist and that I would be put there on Uluru at that particular time through no choice of my own. It's simply been one series of synchronistic events that's put me there. And it's very bizarre, folks, and it's a very, very humbling experience as well. I kind of feel like I'm in the middle of an Indiana Jones movie or something. It's really very bizarre, folks, but I'll certainly keep you posted on the events that occur along my little track that I'm going on from late September until mid-October. Now, I've had a lot of people writing me recently in response to some other shows that I've done on other stations, some other interviews, and asking me for more information regarding the songlines and what the songlines actually are. And I'll explain it for you again for those people who missed it and those people who've been writing to me. Now, back in the first days, when the original people experienced reality, whenever they would come across something new, like a bird or an insect or a plant or an animal or anything new, they would create lore around it in order to preserve the information. And this original lore was conveyed to people via means of song and dance and art. What the original people would do is they would create a specific type of artwork on the ground. And I'm sure many people are familiar with Australian Aboriginal artwork. It seems to be a series of dots and things like this. Well, every dot in this artwork, folks, every one of them has significance. Everyone is placed in a specific spot. Not one dot is out of place. You can't just put random dots around somewhere and call it Aboriginal art. Everything needs to be done precisely, and it needs to be done in the right way, because it is this art that conveys Aboriginal lore. And accompanying the art, there is always a song and there is always a dance. So the original people would create artwork on the ground, and they would create a song and they would create a dance. And the song and dance and the art would convey the information regarding the lore they wish to convey to you. It might be a lore relating to a crocodile, an emu, or to bees, or to a particular bird or a particular plant. They would be able to convey this information to people, and they would be able to convey everything about the plant, not just what it looked like or what it tasted like or smelt like, but what it was like energetically. Everything about the plant could be conveyed through this art and dance and song. And all the language used in the song would always mimic the particular thing they were talking about, whether it was a crocodile or a bee or a plant or whatever. The language would relate to that. See, all Aboriginal language comes from the earth. All Aboriginal language is based on the sounds of nature. And as they spread their race out, they followed certain paths across the country, and every time they came across a new species, they would create a new lore in regard to that species. And bearing in mind that there are 70 different nations, 70 different Aboriginal nations across Australia, each one of them spoke slightly different dialects, but the law remained the same. They all spoke the same language of law, and that law was always conveyed in song and dance and art. And as I said, as they travelled across the country, each time they came across new information or a new species, they would create new law, a new song, a new dance, a new artwork relating to that species. And the path that they followed in this exploration is the path of the songlines. This is how the songlines first came into being, and this is how they always operated. They travelled from one side of the country to the other side of the country, from the tail of the rainbow serpent to the mouth of the rainbow serpent. Now, something else that I mentioned on a show with Chris Everard a couple of weeks ago is that one really significant thing about this is the understanding of the original people of how light and sound vibration affects reality and how everything is made up of light and sound vibration. And knowing how to manipulate this sound and light vibration is how you are able to manipulate reality itself. And this can be done for either good purposes or for bad purposes. And manipulating this energy for bad purposes, this is what people term as Luciferianism. But most people don't understand that because they are caught in this dichotomy of God versus the devil, when really what it's all about is the manipulation of energy. And this is what people would term black magic as, folks. It's simply understanding how to manipulate this energy, this sound and light vibration, for nefarious purposes. And this is part of the ancient knowledge, part of the ancient knowledge that's been hidden from the world, and part of the ancient knowledge that is very well known by those who control this planet. And this can be proven by the fact that when the Christians first arrived in Australia and they brought their priests with them, one of the first things the priests did was they got Aboriginal children to walk the song lines singing Christian hymns so that they actually sang Western law into the country. And I think it is incredibly profound that they knew to do this, because everything the church tells people is dark and black and you mustn't look at this because this is of the devil. What you find is that these are the practices that the church actually gets up to themselves. Because any Christian worth his salt or any Catholic worth his salt would condemn me even talking about the song lines. And yet here we find the Vatican priests who actually knew about the song lines and who went to an enormous amount of trouble to ensure that they sang Christian law into this country when they arrived here. Now, this is incredibly significant, folks. It's incredibly significant. And one of the most significant things about it is that it shows that the ancient knowledge is known by the Vatican, and it clearly demonstrates the true significance of these song lines and the true significance of light and sound vibration. You see, history goes back a lot further than what we believe it to, folks. It certainly goes back a great deal longer than the 5,000 years we are told by the Bible, and it even appears to go back a great deal longer than what we are even told by mainstream science. Records of the original people of Australia can put the history back to at least 400,000 years, and they actually say it's a great deal longer than that. And there are significant connections between this country and overseas as well, folks. Something that you may or may not have heard me talk about is the Egyptian connections that are found in Australia here. There are pyramids that exist in Gympie. One of them was destroyed by the military, but there is one that still remains. And there is also rock art in a place called the Hunter Valley, just north of Sydney in the Blue Mountains. And this rock art clearly depicts Egyptian hieroglyphs. And these are not well-known Egyptian hieroglyphs either. They're actually quite an ancient language. And that very much lends credibility to their authenticity, because if one was to forge Egyptian hieroglyphs, it would most likely be ones that are found in books, whereas this is a particularly ancient language that is not found in many books. And one would have to be a very well-studied Egyptian scholar in order to even know these hieroglyphs. Something else that was reported by an anthropologist by the name of A.P. Elkin in a book he wrote called Aboriginal Men of High Degree was that two common languages that were shared by the settlers and several of the local tribes was Egyptian and Freemasonic hand symbols. And this is really incredible information to come to light, folks, to think that several of the tribes of Australia were able to communicate with the British settlers using Egyptian and Freemasonic hand symbols literally boggles the mind. And it certainly goes a long way to disproving everything we've been taught about history. I just love finding out information like this, folks. I think it's incredible. I mean, I know that the history that we're taught by the mainstream is complete bollocks. I mean, that's obvious simply by the remnants of ancient civilizations that we find lying all over the planet. But it's truly fabulous when you come across stories that clearly show a connection, such as the book that I just mentioned by A.P. Elkin. The original people of Australia also have a great deal of history regarding higher beings, higher intelligences, such beings as are depicted in Indian teachings with the blue people, such as you will see in Krishna paintings, the Egyptian stories of the sun gods, Ra, and so forth. And these are beings or entities that the original people say possessed higher technology that was an organic technology, more of a technology of the mind. The original people also say that the orbs that are sometimes seen in photographs taken by people that seem to be invisible to the naked eye but often show up in photographs are related to these higher beings and are connected to these higher beings, and they believe that the dimensions are beginning to overlap and we will soon encounter these beings again. Very interesting stuff, folks. I certainly have been enjoying hearing the stories of the elders lately, and it's been great to be in contact with people who have the correct stories to tell me. And of course, that's how I'm able to bring them to you. I really do not like to present the lore of the original people to you unless I've had it recounted to me by an elder and unless I've been given permission by the elder to bring the information to the rest of the world, because I think there is an awful lot of disinformation out there regarding Aboriginal legends and regarding ancient stories. Many people seem to put their own slant onto things and information gets greatly changed. That's something that I've found wonderful about the original people of Australia, is that their lore never changes. Their lore stays the same no matter who you talk to. Because as I said, even though they had over 70 dialects, the language of the law was always the same, because it was the language of song and dance and art. And I think I've recounted to you before that there has been times when there have been several elders sitting down together arguing over the pronunciation of a single word in original law. So there is no question that this law has remained unchanged ever since it was first created. And great care has always been undertaken in order to preserve the original dances and the original songs and the original artwork. And as I said, not a dot can be put out of place when one is constructing artwork that pertains to lore. Everything must be in the correct place in order to convey the correct lore and in order to create the correct energy from the experience as well, because the original people know that energy plays an extremely important role in everything that we do and in all creation. And you'll find that this is the same in all indigenous cultures, folks, and it's very much the same with the original inhabitants of North America, who also very much base their songs and their lore on the sound and the workings of nature around them. Most ancient and indigenous cultures always had a great connection to the planet that they lived on, and they always lived in harmony with nature. And the original people of Australia and of the Americas certainly never believed that they could own any part of the earth. They very much believed that the earth actually owned them. And that knowledge helped them live in harmony with this planet. And that's something that we seem to have very much lost in our modern culture. But I think it's about break time now, folks, so I'll have to leave it there for now and we'll go and have a break. I hope you're enjoying the show today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I'll speak to you again in a few minutes. Thanks for listening. And welcome back, folks. Now, I know that everything I related to you in the first half of the show today may seem a little strange, and you may wonder why I am giving any credence to ancient Aboriginal legends or anything like this. And folks, for me, it's just a matter of synchronicity. Because, you see, it isn't that I'm actually giving credence to any legends. It's just that all of these legends do, in fact, exist. And I find it remarkable that the synchronicities in my life have led me to be part of these legends and have put me in these places at these times. Another interesting thing about the ceremony that I'm doing on top of Uluru on the 27th is that on that day here in Byron Bay, there will be a huge going away party being conducted in Railway Park in Byron Bay in preparation for the beginning of the road trip, which happens on the 28th of September. Now, bear in mind that the day before the road trip starts, I will be on Uluru activating the heart of the Rainbow Serpent in order to prepare for the journey across the songlines that is being undertaken by the original people. And that's just another aspect of it, folks. It's just remarkable that I would be there to activate the heart of the serpent the day before the journey across the songlines begins. And bear in mind, folks, that my trip to Uluru is something that's been planned for months. It's something that was planned long before I met Carrie-Anne Cox, long before I was made Numbal, and they were not aware of the dates that I would be in Uluru when they planned to celebrate their departure on the 27th or begin their road trip on the 28th. This all happened months before I ever met Carrie-Anne Cox or her mother or heard about what was going on in James Price Point or even knew the story of the songlines. These sorts of synchronistic events just seem to always be a part of my life, and in giving credence to these type of stories, the question is, what if it's true? What if it's all true and the synchronicity has put you there at the right time in order for you to participate and add your energetic input to the whole equation? Would you simply ignore it? Even though you're going to be there at the right time and you're going to be in the right place to do all of the right things, well, why wouldn't you do them, just in case it's true? And why wouldn't you do it anyway, simply out of respect for the original people and out of respect for their legends and traditions? Because I feel that it is an incredible honor to be involved in this, and I'm looking forward to my role in the whole affair. But this is not to say that I'm simply going to concentrate on some energy shift that's supposed to happen and I'm not going to apply myself to the world around me. I think that would be a huge mistake. And I think that is what far too many people do when they get involved in this sort of thing. They sit there and they do their rituals and they immerse themselves in love and light, but they fail to apply any of it to the world around them. And we very much intend to apply this to the world around us. Once I've finished the ceremony on Uluru, I intend to hook up with the people doing the road trip, and I will find myself a lift from Alice Springs, from Uluru, from the centre of Australia, to James Price Point in the Kimberley. I don't even know how I'm going to do it yet, folks. I don't have any plans at all after I leave Uluru. I'll be parting company with David Icke and Adam Davis at Uluru, and I have no flights or buses or anything booked to leave the area. I will simply be throwing myself to the whim of the universe, and I'll see what happens and see where I end up. And I'm pretty sure that where I will end up will be the Kimberley Coast for the gathering that is planned there on the 10th of October 2011. And what the original people intend to do there at the Gas Hub, folks, is simply set up camp. They're just going to reclaim the land and set up their campsite right there at the Gas Hub because it's actually their land. There are no violent protests planned. There are no actions of civil disobedience or anything planned. They're simply going to set up camp and say, we live here now, as is their right to do so, because the original people are still the owners of this country. See, that's the beauty of this country, folks. This is the only country in the world that the Crown has ever touched that they still do not have any claim to whatsoever. Australia is very unique in that way because it is still owned by the original people. And I believe there are documents that were put forth by Governor Phillip when Australia was first colonised, and these documents clearly state that the Crown has no claim to the land, and that as soon as the original people are fit to govern themselves, then the land will be given back to them. Of course, the Crown has repressed the original people to an incredible degree ever since they arrived here, and they've made sure that the original people have remained mostly uneducated to the ways of the white man, and so there has never been an opportunity for the people to govern themselves. However, things have changed greatly in the last couple of generations, and now there are people who are capable of governing themselves, and there are many white people who've come on board and treated with the original people as well. And it's helping to create this very, very powerful front that can effectively claim this land back. And they have the legal right to do so. So I think it's very important that those of you who are awake in this country and who are aware of what's going on, and if you have a good heart and you do care about humanity and do care for the ways of the original people of this country, I suggest that you all treaty with the original people of this country and start becoming part of a movement that can effectively claim this country back. Because, as I said, folks, this is the only country in the world that can actually do this, because this is the only country in the world that the Crown has ever touched that the Crown still has no legal claim to. There is no document that can be tabled anywhere that shows that the original people of this country are not still the owners of this country, because they are. You see, folks, the thing is that we have to do something. We have to start taking some positive steps to reclaim our position. Humanity has to grow up. We have to become humanity again. And we have to put our governments back into their rightful place as the servants of the people. Because really, folks, when you add the whole thing up, look at the money system, look at the wars, look at the pollution, look at the starvation, look at all of the problems that we have. And all of these problems are due to the fact that our servants are out of control. And so this is why we have to claim back our birthright. And our birthright is this earth. It is the birthright of every person on the planet. Freedom and a healthy environment is everybody's birthright. And this is why I've been attempting to present all of this trust law stuff to people as well, folks. It isn't that I expect people to go and take on the system. I just want people to understand that they are free and that our servants are out of control. And I believe that any step that we can take to reclaim our birthright and to reclaim our rightful position as humanity is a worthwhile step. Any way we can disentangle ourselves from this system is a good thing. And that is why I am so eager to support the original people in their stand for freedom. Because these are beautiful people. This is a beautiful planet. And we have an opportunity here to stand up and make things right. Coal seam gas mining is having exactly the effect that I expected it would. It is causing a huge movement of people who are willing to stand up against the government over the issue of coal seam gas mining. I knew it would do this, folks. It's just such a blatant attack against humanity and a blatant attack against the environment. And it just seemed obvious that it was really going to be the thing that would arouse people from their slumber. And there has been a spate of propaganda on the television, actually, in Australia, I've been told. I don't actually own a TV, so I don't get to see it, but apparently there are a lot of pro-coal seam gas commercials being shown on TV at the moment, and they're saying how it's going to take time to win back the hearts of the people, because they absolutely believe they're right, and they don't intend to stop any of it at all. And they think that everybody's misinformed for being concerned about the water table. But we're not going to let up, folks. There is going to be a complete stop put to coal seam gas mining, and I have all confidence that the gas hub in Western Australia will be stopped completely, because we're simply not going to let up on the matter. I think it's wonderful that the original people of the country are simply going to claim sovereignty over that section of land and not allow the hub to go forward. And I think it's wonderful that there are so many people from around Australia and hopefully from around the world that are going to show up at James Price Point and support them in this action on the 10th of October this year. And for those of you who are coming, I'll see you there, folks, because I am certainly going to be standing out with the people on this one. This is an incredibly important issue. You see, it doesn't matter which religion you subscribe to, folks. It doesn't matter whether you subscribe to Christianity. It doesn't matter whether you are a Muslim, whether you are a Jew, whether you follow the New Age teachings. It doesn't matter whether you're a shaman. It doesn't matter whether you're a pagan. It doesn't matter what you believe in. What matters is the stance you are prepared to take when the chips are down. When we are in a situation where the very destruction of the planet that we live on, which of course will result in the destruction of all life upon the planet, can be so clearly seen on the horizon, what stance are you prepared to take? Are you still going to perceive yourself as being divided from others? Are you still going to wait for a savior to come? Are you still going to deny everybody else their means of spiritually dealing with the problem? Or are you simply going to put down your guard and realize that all the people on this planet are important, that all perspectives are important, and truly begin to comprehend the massive effect we could have as a human species if we were simply to unite into a community of mutual respect for each other and address the situation that has been created by our servants taking over control of the mansion due to our failure to ever stop them. And folks, I don't believe we need any one world government. I don't believe we even need nationalism at all. I believe patriotism is a good thing. I'm proud to be an Australian. I'll always be proud to be an Australian. And I don't wish anyone else to be in control of Australia apart from the Australian people. And I wish the same for every country on earth. But I don't have this nationalistic fervour where I see Australia as being better than anywhere else. I simply see Australia as the country that I was born in, a place that I am proud to be connected to, because it is a place that I'm connected to more than anywhere else, because I was born in this country. So of course I have connection to the land that I was born in, and I'm very patriotic of this land. But I don't hold any national pride for the flag of Australia. It's just a meaningless symbol to me. I'm man, and I live on the planet Earth. Australia is simply the section of that planet that I was born on. And if all people on this Earth could have mutual respect for each other and realize that everybody else's patriotic love for their own country is just as valid as the love they hold for their own country, and then honour the patriotism that people hold and honour the people of other countries and honour the human species and each person within the human species as being valid, then where would the problems lie? Even the fact that this incredible journey from one side of Australia, from the tip of the Rainbow Serpent to the mouth of the Rainbow Serpent, is being undertaken across the songlines by people who simply care enough for this planet that they are willing to undertake such a journey, is an amazing thing in itself. But the real issue here is that the journey needs to be made, because it shouldn't need to be made. Things should already be okay. Our servants should not be out of control the way they are. You see, that's the real problem, folks. But the fact that this journey is even being attempted shows how much people want change. And it shows what can be accomplished when people simply put aside their differences and stand together for a common cause. And frankly, folks, I think all avenues need to be pursued. I really, really do. I think that we need to pursue these spiritual avenues, but we need to also pursue the physical avenues. We need to pursue political avenues, financial avenues. We need to pursue all the avenues. But you can't attempt to ever succeed physically through things like violent revolution, because there is no spirituality in violent revolution. And this is the same reason why you will never succeed in just a spiritual approach unless you apply it to the physical world around you, because you need to blend the two approaches. You absolutely need to do this in order to have balance. You need to have a spiritual understanding in your stand for freedom. That's what's important. That's what's so important about trust law. It's simply knowing that you're free and knowing who and what you are. When you understand this and you know this, you can simply stand in it. And I know that sounds strange to people, but you can, especially if the people around you also have this understanding, because then everybody is standing in this and the whole system suddenly becomes transparent and the whole system suddenly fails to work anymore because people have finally claimed their birthright. And I've always been very supportive of the spiritual approach to everything, folks. I mean, I've got The Great Intention, which still happens from my website, 10 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time every Saturday night. There is still a global meditation that happens. There's also a global meditation that is happening on 11/11. A lady, I think her name may be Shelley Long, and I hope I've got that name right. But there is a lady who has organized a global meditation on the 11th of the 11th, and that is called Fire the Grid. And I suggest you go and look up that site as well, folks. I'll be putting Fire the Grid as the featured site on the Crow House for the month of October after I get back from James Price Point, around about the 10th or the 12th of October. I'll be adding the site to the Crow House as the featured website. 10,000 Amend will stay as the featured website until that time in order to alert people to the initiative that is being undertaken at James Price Point. But I would ask you very much to look up Fire the Grid and to support the global meditation that is happening. There is a clock on the website. It is a synchronized time for everybody on Earth, and we can all get together and we can really, really put some positive energy into the grid, folks. And I think all of these things work, but they also have to be accompanied by physical application to the world around you. You absolutely have to participate in your surroundings, folks. And again, this is regardless of whichever beliefs or whichever teachings you're following. If you are a Christian, start acting as Christ would act. Start following in his footsteps. We need to create a website that's called What Would Jesus Do? And we need to have answers to all of these problems there. So when you find yourself in a moral dilemma, you can simply go to a website and type in the question and ask what Jesus would do in that situation. And personally, I think we should all do that. I think if we did actually follow the teachings of some of the people that we revere as teachers and started to walk in their footsteps, I think we could change things very, very effectively. It's called self-responsibility, folks, and it's a wonderful thing when you can truly come to grips with it. So yes, folks, it's certainly going to be an interesting time for me the next 6 weeks. I will be recording some radio shows for you on the road, as I said. I'll try to get hold of some elders and maybe interview some elders. I will be videoing a lot of what goes on Uluru when I'm there and a lot of the journey across Australia. So I will try to post some of that on the Crow House and on YouTube. I may be able to get some 15-minute segments uploaded there along the way. I might create a playlist called Rainbow Serpent Road Trip or something like that and keep you all updated as to what's going on. And I will also, of course, be continuing the weekly radio shows, though the audio quality may not be quite as good as what you're used to, because God knows where I will be when I record them. But I will very much attempt to continue with the weekly shows while I'm away and keep you updated on all the news from the outback of Australia. I think I remember saying to you at some stage near the end of 2010, or maybe the beginning of this year, that I believed 2011 was going to be a year of great change. I felt that 2011 was going to be the year that consciousness really did begin to shift. And some of the things that have happened in my life in the past month or so have certainly confirmed that for me. And this trip that is now being undertaken across this country is also, I believe, confirmation of a shift in consciousness that is taking place. And remember, folks, when I talk about a shift in consciousness, I don't mean the planet is suddenly going to raise in frequency and everyone's going to wake up. I believe it is something that we need to participate in ourselves. And I think there are certain forces and there are certain people that are absolutely instrumental in helping this shift happen. But it is also very much a personal thing. You have to want it for yourself, and you have to be prepared to look within yourself and gain a true perspective of reality yourself. You have to participate, folks. You're not going to just wake up one day to find that God has flicked a switch and you are now enlightened. You have to understand what enlightenment is, and a good deal of it is validating the perspective of others, realizing that you are no better or no worse than anybody else, that we are absolutely all connected, and that we are all absolutely unique. You see, all truly is one, but all is also completely unique by its unique perspective of reality. That's the beauty of it, and that's the only way reality could even function. If it wasn't like that, we couldn't have reality, folks. It just wouldn't work. I think it's absolutely wonderful to be able to view reality from an energetic perspective. It's absolutely wonderful to be able to have these understandings and to be able to see the synchronicity at work in almost every day of our lives, probably in every day of our lives, if we were to look deep enough. And I think it's a great honor to be born at this time and to be part of this incredible change that is taking place in human consciousness. It really does seem like we are witnessing the birth of a new species, the birth of a new reality. And this reality is being spurred forward by the huge shift in consciousness that is happening. And this consciousness shift is a direct result of the awareness of their surroundings and their awareness of reality that is growing amongst humankind. You can't have one without the other, folks. There is no magical switch that will ever be flicked. It's all about you participating in your surroundings and applying it to your spiritual understandings. And it's about growing these spiritual understandings and in turn applying them to your surroundings. It's all about balance, folks. It's all about knowing who and what you are, knowing what reality is, and seeing how everybody else in reality is just as valid and just as important as everybody and everything else. Well, I think that's about it for the show today, folks. Thank you very much for any support you've ever shown to thecrowhouse.com. Thank you for any support that you've given me to help me with this road trip. It's very, very tight budget, folks, this road trip, so I'm just seeing how I go. But I'm sure that everything is going to work out. Thank you for continuing to visit thecrowhouse.com. Thank you for all the support you've shown to my YouTube channel. Thank you for the wonderful comments and the kind emails and kind messages that you all send me. It is truly a great honor and truly very, very humbling to receive such wonderful thoughts from people. And please know that all of you are always in my own thoughts as well. It's been a pleasure speaking to you again today, folks. Very, very different sort of a show this week, I must admit. But it's just something that I felt the need to share with you all. And so thank you for listening. I'll look forward to speaking to you again next week. Take care until then. In La Cache.